We talk about rights a whole lot in our part of the world. Civil rights, gun rights, grazing rights. It's a long list, and you can add to the list now community rights. As the name implies, these are not rights sought or enjoyed by individuals, but by people in groups. The concept is gaining traction as communities try to exercise some control over issues like GMO agriculture and water bottling plants and other operations that affect more than just the operators. A ballot measure could appear on Oregon's November ballot. If passed, it would put community rights into the state constitution. Let's get some idea of what that means. Two guests join us. Ann Neeland is a Eugene attorney and a founding member of Community Rights Lane County and back on the Jefferson Exchange. Ann, welcome.
Thanks very much, Jeff.
We also have with us Kai Hushke, and Kai, correct me if I'm getting your name wrong, Northwest Organizer for the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. No, and you did a great job with the name.
Okay. So, and fair to say that community rights are seen as something of a counterbalance to corporate rights or rights that, somebody else is exercising?
Yeah, I think that's a fair characterization. It's very much an effort to elevate the people's rights to write and pass laws, to elevate our rights in the community, but also the rights of nature. And to do that, we need to limit what are corporate rights and privileges that currently are dictating how our society is operating.
The rights of nature. Have there been cases in which nature has been identified as having rights?
Those are issues that have been grappled with very little in this country, but there are other countries that are increasingly recognizing the rights of nature, such as Ecuador and New Zealand. And this is a concept that's becoming increasingly familiar to people as we get closer and closer to a world that's unsustainable. And until we recognize the rights of nature and realize that it's, as long as we continue to bow to the property god and exploit and extract, we're working ourselves towards planetary extinction. And so we need to reframe our legal structure and recognize that nature has rights and that we're all dependent upon nature to live and breathe. And so that's the direction that we believe our legal system needs to go.
That's an interesting term, the property god, as in I can do what I want with my property?
Yeah. I mean, right now we have a legal system that defends our property owner's rights to destroy or exploit the property that they own. And as we see on a small scale, but really more meaningfully on a large scale, when corporations own large pieces of property and either construct factories or engage in economic activities like fracking or corporate water withdrawals or those kinds of things, that there are tremendous, tremendous economic impacts of these activities that are rendering our water unclean, our air unclean, and are really contributing to what's getting to be a negative feedback loop of climate change that is becoming, as many say, increasingly unstoppable.
So, Kai Hushke, as we approach an expansion of community rights, how do you provide some reassurance, if there is any to be given, to people who do believe very strongly in property rights, and they seem to be quite numerous in the West?
Yeah, I think it's a discussion long overdue in the sense of making distinctions between variations of property rights. So what Ann was just describing was really this corporate property rights in the form of actual land, but also things like permits are considered corporate property. And so I think it's about understanding that, you know, defending one's house or having the right to enjoy one's home is very different than a corporation having these legal protections to basically destroy the environment and communities because the law sees it as property. So I think it is a distinction and something of which the legal system has to catch up to because of the way that it's currently structured. We sort of lump all that kind of property rights elements all together. And the reality is what we call property rights often really is not a right. It's really a privilege which is being protected. So I think it's time we have these discussions and not just be triggered by the term of property rights and people getting in defensive mode, but really making distinction about what do we mean and what's really a right and what's really a privilege, and are we actually, as Ann was describing too, on the right kind of course for us collectively as communities and really as the whole planet.
So do you envision property rights as being vested in perhaps a group of neighbors? Would it be vested in the local government? I mean, who would assert community rights, I guess, is the largest question.
Yeah, well, it's coming really from a fundamental right, which is the right of local self-government. So to be self-determining is really at the crux of what community rights is built upon. So in essence, the community really having self-governing power, of which I think we already understand that we have, but we have a legal system that wants to, again, protect and shield really corporate privilege over that. So the reality is when it comes to advancing, you know, greater sustainability or greater health at the community level, it's about allowing the community to be able to bring that forward, whether it's around agriculture or energy or economics, such that then the corporation or even the state shouldn't be able to come in and undermine that effort of the community advancing, again, those greater rights or protections. So in some ways, it's an old concept, and perhaps in some ways maybe it's a new concept in the sense of this idea of community rights versus just looking at, you know, whether or not the government is violating, for instance, your individual rights.
Kai Hushke and Ann Neeland are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about community rights, and there is a ballot measure that will begin circulating in Oregon soon with the potential of getting onto the November ballot, dealing with community rights in the state constitution. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. And I can see there are a couple of different ways you might have gone with community rights. One would have been to limit the rights of corporations or property owners in some way, but it looks like what you've chosen instead is to go with an expansion of the rights of the other side.
Well, really, it's a marriage of both those things. So the local laws and the initiative that's being moved forward at the state level are efforts to do both of those things at the same time, and to say that we are going to recognize rights at the community level to write and pass laws that acknowledge that the community has rights, but at the same time do that while authorizing the community to say we will not recognize the constitutional rights of corporations to make decisions for our community and exact harm on our community in ways that we don't want to have happening in the community. So really it's a marriage of both of those concepts.
But could community rights, for example, be exercised against the government, for example, with the people in eastern Oregon who think that the land out there, at least some do, think that the grazing land should be in the hands of the local community, not the federal government?
Well, the authority of the rights of local community self-government as written into the initiative that's being moved forward at the state level would recognize a community's right to pass laws recognizing their rights, but not to do so in any way that undermines current constitutional protections and other existing protections under the law. And so we'd have to, you know, look at what was being put forward, but certainly it would not authorize a community to take actions that would undermine existing protections.
Okay, a couple of callers here. Let's go to Mark in Redding, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking community rights with Ann Neeland and Kai Hushke.
Well, I think my question may have been answered. My question is, how would your proposal, if passed, deal with a community wanting to take control of the national forest land near their community, or you know, take control of a wildlife refuge near their community? That was my question. I think it's been answered. But
all right. Thanks for that, Mark. Appreciate it. So pretty much what you said, Ann, though, is that you're not talking about changing any existing relationships between governments?
Well, in a broad sense, it would empower the people and local governments to write and pass laws to elevate people's rights above corporate rights. And so it's a recognition that even local governments that currently now are limited under the current legal framework would have rights to recognize people's rights and community rights and truly support the health, safety, and welfare of their community, which is currently limited under the current legal system. So it empowers even local government to embrace greater rights for their community. It's not only a limiting factor to government.
Okay, let's take another call from Vajra in Sunny Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. Wonderful topic. Out here in Sunny Valley, we were going into year six in our battle against a mine, an aggregate pit. The commissioners rezoned the property, which is rural residential, and it for a private corporation, not a big corporation, but a private profit, and we've been inspired by the community rights movement, and we've had to fight, though, without the advantage of having community rights, you know, instituted. And what we've done is we have finally got a referendum on the ballot. It'll be on the May ballot here in Josephine County, Measure 1768, to vote down the decision by the commissioners to rezone. So that's been our tactic, and I'd like to know what you think about I just want to say that it'll drain the aquifer out here. Our experts say it'll damage wells, a total loss of you know, peace and quiet,
mm-hmm.
dangerous haul route, and all of this. So I'd like to ask what you, Anne, you think of the that tactic and how that might be differently done if we actually had community rights instituted.
Okay, thanks for the question, Vajra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I wholly support your effort to protect your community and your residential environment of your neighborhoods. And I think you're absolutely right to take action to do that. You know, I think the challenge that communities like yours face is that the current legal system does not support individuals or communities coming together to say no to corporate activity, no matter what the size. And so because the system is set up to recognize the property rights of that corporation, the system is not designed to support communities saying no to corporations exercising their rights of property or commerce or what have you. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that ballot initiative. I think the challenge for you will be to assert an authority that your community has to say no. And I think that's what the community rights movement offers, is that we put forward an authority that is well-rooted in American history and also really fundamentally, I think, a history around the world, which is that we as people have a right to self-government. And that is a concept that's been recognized in American history through the Declaration of Independence and really the early days before the Constitution got kind of co-opted, and that we need to return to those values and find those values that are rooted in our history to say that we do have a right to say no in our communities and write and pass the laws exactly like the one your community is putting forward.
Kai Hushke, are there other states besides Oregon that are making moves on community rights? Have they been exercised in some places already?
Yes, there are. I mean, there are basically, you know, this work has appeared in about 10 different states, with five of those being really active, Oregon being one of them, Colorado, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New Hampshire, and all very much mobilizing on the same grounds as the caller from Sunny Valley there, which is, you know, here are these corporate projects coming in. They're affecting our health, safety, and welfare. They're really not what we want in our community, that we don't see as being really a sustainable enterprise, yet we have a system that wants to protect that moving forward against the will of the people. And so that mobilization on a whole slew of different issues is, you know, popped up again most in the most volume in those five active states, with Colorado being another state moving a state initiative very similar to the one in Oregon around the right of community self-government there, and basically putting corporations once again under the control of people, which also was in a very short period of our history what we did, because part of the Revolutionary War wasn't just about the king. It was actually about corporate control at that point, the East India Company. And so coming out of that that horrible war itself, the understanding was we have to control the corporate form to actually be about public benefit. And unfortunately, what has happened through the way our legal system is built and constitutional structures, the corporate form has been able to find its way to where it sits today, which is really having more power than us as people, having more power really than our state, and even in large degree our own federal government. So the question is, can you challenge that, and can you correct for it? And I think that's exactly what's happening in Oregon and in these other places, which is actually to restructure government back to what I think people originally thought it was supposed to be, around decentralized decision-making, about protection of rights, and really ultimately about health, safety, and happiness.
Ann Neeland, when you take up a concept that can be as complicated as community rights, I mean, how big is the ballot measure that is planned for circulation for petition signatures?
I mean, this ballot measure is actually quite short. It really is simply two parts. One is to recognize local communities and local governments' authority to write and pass laws that elevate our health and safety and welfare, and to do that while limiting corporate rights and corporate privileges, and then includes the protection piece I referenced earlier, which is to say that these laws cannot be written to undermine existing protections, so that often people fear that if you give too much lawmaking authority to communities, somebody will want to pass discriminatory laws or those types of things, and that is not permitted under this initiative. And so it's quite simple in its text. You know, And we hope that the voters will see that and will be supportive of extending the people's power to protect our communities.
But since you're aiming for the Constitution, you have to have more than 117,000 valid signatures. What's the nutshell when you're pitching to people to get them to sign the petition?
I think it's about saying, do you want the authority to say no in your community to corporate harms? And do you want to be able to have the authority to protect your community and live in an economic and environmentally sustainable way?
Do you see any potential for confusion if this should pass with exercising of rights differing from place to place?
Well, you know, that the whole patchwork kind of argument is one of the favorites of the sort of the right wing to sabotage things. But I think, you know, we've lived in a country where laws and rights have differed from place to place often. And so I think we can't be put off by the idea that there might be inconsistency. I think it's corporations more than anybody who fears inconsistency in some regional ways because they have financial consequences of that kind of inconsistency. But I don't think we need to be afraid of communities stepping up to provide additional protections to their community to address harms that are specific to their community and other communities focusing on different kinds of rights.
And before we go, where do things stand with the ballot measure now?
Right now, we are awaiting a decision from the Secretary of State concerning whether it complies with the pre-election requirements to be able to collect signatures for it. So we'll be hearing that in the next couple weeks.
Okay, a couple steps left to go before we see the circulation of a petition to collect signatures to put a community rights constitutional amendment for Oregon on the ballot. We will be visiting this again through the year, I'm sure. Ann Neeland is a Eugene attorney and a founding member of Community Rights Lane County. Kai Hushke is the Northwest organizer for the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, also board member of Envision Spokane. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
All right, take care.